Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Typically is among the leaders every year. Here's the pitch. There goes Cruz. Pitch is swung on and hit to right. Down the line and deep, and this ball is gone. Home run for Brian Reynolds. A line drive to right. And the Pirates, two batters in, they lead it 2-0. Pitch blasted to left field. Barrero tags this one, and it's into the bullpen. A long home run for Jose Barrero. Filling in today. And he gets the Cardinals on the board. It's now 2-1, Pirates. 2-1, the Pirates lead. We're in the third, and the pitch. Swing, fly ball out to deep right. Oh, he feels good about this one. Finally, second home run from Rose, and he's not homered very much this year. And maybe he's awakening at the wrong time for the Pirates. It's tied at 2 here in this third inning.
To call this team bad is a compliment.
Here's a 2-2, swinging a ball lined sharply to left. Fam back on this one, and there it goes! A line drive, home run. Wilson Contreras homers, and the Cardinals lead 4-3 here in the sixth.
What planet is he coming from?
Now the pitch by Sugart, swinging a liner down the left field line. If it's down, it's trouble, and it will bang off the wall, and it will bang over the wall for an automatic double, scoring 2, and the Cardinals lead 6-3 here in the sixth. Barrero is driven in 3 tonight. 3-2 to Reynolds. Strike 3, call. 102 miles an hour. He finally sees a fastball. And he takes it. And that is how the game ends. A bitter taste.
I like this. This is a new opening song. Yeah. Where'd you get this, Limitless Wonder?
Well, it's in the rotation and it's a good one. So
yes, it is.
That's what matters most.
What a man you've become. This is a disaster.
Does that mean that I wasn't a good man before?
Not this good. Yeah.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
You were above average, but you've become better now that you've changed.
Above average major leaguer.
Yeah, now that you've changed the music, you've definitely become better. You know, of course we're going to dive into this. What is Bob Nutting doing? As one of my mailbag questioners said, you know, a computer running a team would have made a change by now at manager and GM. What does this man need to see? Our friend and yours, Pony, on his show yesterday, the one he shares with Mulsey, I don't want to give anybody propriety over that show, said they're on pace for their fewest wins ever in a 162-game season. And he's right. I just did the calculus here. Limits. They've won 12 of 36 baseball games. They're on pace for 54 wins. Forget about 162 games. I think you have to go back to 1952 or 53. I can't remember which, when they won 52 or 53. I can't remember which, but it was less than 54. What has happened? What is happening? What are we doing here? But before we get to this disaster, would you like a piece of good? Would you like a couple of pieces of good news?
I would love some good news.
I figured you would, and I figured everybody out there would. Do you think it's enjoyable coming in here and talking about that every day? Or the Steelers who live in a land of high-end mediocrity, who haven't come close to winning a playoff game in 8 years, and whose record over the last 4 years, including playoffs, is 38-32-1, with a minus 80 point differential and a bunch of first-round blowout playoff losses? And the Penguins, who can't even lose right, they finished too high in the lottery. Looked like they had a chance for a minute, didn't it?
It did. I felt like
it got up to 18%.
It would have been so ironic if they would have won the draft lottery this year and then next year had like no shot at it or something bad happened and they don't land Gavin McKenna. That's what I'm holding out hope for.
Well, that would be good. That would be the idea. There's always next year to sink to the bottom of the league.
Can I trash the draft lottery?
Please, yeah.
It made absolutely no sense.
It was
last
so
night.
Stupid.
It made no sense. I was
it
so
was
confused.
The worst TV show I've ever seen. It was up there with Hello, Larry, starring McLean Stevenson.
And the only thing that made it
who
good
starred
was
in MASH, I might
Butch
add.
Agrosh just going, whoa, every time that there was a huge jump up in the board, like for the Islanders getting the number one pick.
What's the worst television show you've ever seen? Elf, or did you like that show?
Elf, the movie?
Wasn't it a show, too? Alf with an A?
Oh, Alf.
Yeah, I don't know. What's the worst show you've ever seen?
Young Sheldon. I know a lot of people
oh,
love
come on.
It,
that's
but I don't like it at all.
I know, but it's not. That's not,
no, it's probably not the worst
a joke
ever.
Of a show.
No, it's not a joke.
That we would all agree on. You don't remember Hello, Larry. It was before your time. Colonel Blake tried to do something else, and like so many people who are typecast from a show, he failed, well, like the Pirates.
I said hello to Larry Richard in the hallway. That's my hello, Larry, of the day.
I do that often.
Yeah.
All right, you can't think of a horrible TV show. Oh, you don't watch TV very much,
I do watch
you?
A lot of TV.
Well,
remember, I was watching,
show,
I was
then.
Crying at NCIS Origins last week. Remember that?
I do remember that.
I watched the NCIS season finale yesterday as well.
And the whole family was crying together. All right. That sucked.
Yeah.
And they need to be worse than 11th. 11th is too Steeler-like. You're more in the mushy middle than the bottom. But like I said, there's always next year for the Penguins. And by the way, they're not going to get the Rangers' protected pick this year, which I think was 12th or 13th.
12th. It's right behind theirs.
The Rangers won't do that. They'll take that pick. I would anyway, because they think they're going to win right away.
And they just took your coach, too. So we'll take your coach, we'll keep our pick, and you get next year's pick when we draft like 24th.
Well, they can have the coach and all these people who think that Sully's going to win right away, him and Torts. Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. Mike Sullivan did an unbelievable job here. He came in, it was lightning in a bottle. He was the perfect guy at the perfect time, but always in pro sports, it's about the players. And he had some very, very special guys here. Starting with number 87 and number 71, but I'm talking also about Hornquist, about Cullen.
The HBK line.
About Bonino, about Kessel, without whom they certainly don't win the first of those two cups and not the second one. I give Mike Sullivan all the credit in the world for stepping in and winning.
Carl Hagelin.
I do. But the fact of the matter remains, he's been a coach for 12 seasons. In 10 of those, he has a combined one playoff series win. One. So in 10 of his 12 seasons as an NHL coach, his teams have underachieved to the point where, well, he's now been fired twice, once by the Bruins and once here. Do I think he's a good hockey coach? Absolutely. Do I think he's going to capture that same magic in New York? No, because he doesn't have the horses.
Not immediately.
And any coach who's, no, not ever. Any coach who's ever lived will tell you it's about the horses. He came in and he tamed them here. And he gets 100% credit for that. But 10 of his 12 seasons as a coach, his teams have underachieved. He doesn't have the horses in New York. His best defenseman is a combination of Carlson and Letang, both of whom drove him insane. His best player has had off-the-ice problems in Panarin. His rising young star, Lafreniere, has been a disappointment. That's just a fact. And
where he was drafted.
His owner is one of the worst owners in pro sports. And don't we know we have one to measure Dolan by? And his GM is a bumbling fool. So listen, if Mike Sullivan walks into that bonfire and wins there, I'll call him the greatest coach who ever lived. And he's already going to the Hall of Fame. Because again, perfect time, perfect storm with the Penguins. He gets every ounce of credit for that. But when I'm judging how he's going to do with the Rangers, I'm looking at his career in totality and 10 of 12 seasons he underachieved. I don't think he's going in there with that owner, that GM, that best player, that best defenseman, and the rest of the guys on that team and the dysfunction within that organization, and is magically going to cure that situation like he did the one here. I'm betting against it. And How did I get off on that tirade?
I was a really good tirade. And those teams in 16-17 had exactly the type of team that Mike Sullivan wants to play. Defensemen that can chip but still be able to get back. Speed, 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 depending on veterans but still young players being able to chip in. And I don't think the Rangers have really the roster at this point
to
do it.
The Rangers don't have Patrick Hornquist in his prime. They don't have special guys. They don't have Sidney Crosby.
They don't have anything close.
Crosby and Malkin at the top of the roster, but it's those special guys on the third line and toward the bottom of the roster that I think really brought things together. And Sully did. Again, he came along at the right time, read the room, and pushed all the right. It was one of the great coaching jobs in NHL history, what he did here. Certainly for that 1 year. The second year, let's be real honest about that. Marc-Andre Fleury handed the Penguins a cup by stoning the Capitals in round two, or was it round one? I can't remember
now.
When they had the better team and were skating circles around the Penguins, who were in rope-a-dope for most of that series, and Fleury stole it. Now, you get to game seven, that was a great coaching job by Sully, it was. But Fleury put them in position to still be alive and get out of that round.
That was the what? Back in Washington, no one thought they were going to pull it
out.
The Capitals are finally going to get over the hump.
Yes, it was.
Ended up happening the next year. But that team was just so dang talented. But
how did we get on this topic? What are we talking about?
Well, we got
coaches?
On Sullivan because we got to the draft lottery and the Rangers
draft pick at 12
and the Penguins 11.
They're not going to go for the pick next year because they think they're going to be good this year.
Right. So they'll give the Penguins like pick 20, 21, 22 if they think that they can actually win a playoff series next year. Yeah, so they're not going to get a top 15 pick from the Rangers.
Right. Well,
unless
let me give you
trash next year.
Yeah, and they don't think they will be,
nope.
Quite clearly. They think Sully's going to come in and work Sully magic, which he did so far in two of his 12 seasons. All right, Limits. Here's the piece of good news. You ready for this? A couple pieces of good news.
Yes.
One is Tony from the Washington Wild Things was here.
I'm glad you brought this up because I was going to bring it up.
What a wonderful man he is.
Great guy.
And I got a sneak preview of the Pomp bobblehead.
I did too.
We can't give away details.
No.
None of them. But I will say that Pomp is going to be very pleased with his bobblehead. You?
I think so as well. And you know,
don't you love it when the technicians come wandering in like they've walked into the middle of a concert and don't know where they are in the middle of the show, Limits? That's one of my favorite things.
I figured you'd bring that up. Yes, I guess.
And we love our technicians. When I have problems with my computer, they're first on board. But you'd think that if there is a problem other than like a fire, that it could wait till 10:25.
And they finally, or who, I don't know who it was, but somebody fixed this microphone. It was broken for very long time, and now it's fixed. So I thank them for that.
I thank them for that as well. What were we? Oh, Pomp's bobblehead.
Yes, Pomp's bobblehead. I like it.
I love
There's a couple other alterations that are still to be made to it, like minor details.
Sure.
But I think Bob is really going to like it, and we can add it to our collection that we have right here in the studio.
That's the least of what we can do. Hopefully we can do a show there that night. And Bob will obviously throw out the first pitch, I would imagine.
For his bobblehead night.
We get to take batting practice. I just confirmed that with Tony.
Let's go.
Which means you and I. I think we should do it from second base. Malzy and I did a show from there a long time ago and did it from home plate. And Malzy's much stronger than me. Neither one of us could get it much into the outfield.
No, we're not hitting
That's
anymore.
A long ways. So why don't we take batting practice at second base and try and crank homers?
If they allow us.
Or Limits. and your eyes are going to light up at this. You may cry like you did at the end of NCIS. You could ask Tony if we could have a wiffle ball game in the outfield and invite your Baldwin friends, and we could hit from second base and use the fence.
Yes!
Out there.
Oh, my gosh.
A three-inning game.
This is a great idea.
With the scoreboard.
I'm texting Tony right now.
Would that be incredible or what?
That would be awesome.
Let's try
Baldwin
for that.
Baldwin Wiffle on the road.
And as if that's not enough excitement, I suggested to Tony from the Wild Things, Mulsey and I were there probably 10 years ago. They had a catcher at the time who was the spitting image of Mulsey. I mean, it was unbelievable. I said, is that guy still in your organization? He said, no, he lives in Ohio. I said we could have him in for the event. And then Tony suggested a Mulsey lookalike contest. What do you make of that idea?
Mulsey lookalike contest?
Would that be incredible?
Are people just going to bring like bald caps or whatever?
Exactly. Like, yes.
Hair nets or something.
A combination pomp bobblehead Mulsey lookalike night might be the greatest night in the history of Pittsburgh sports. Would you agree with that?
I think we have to throw in a caveat, something with Crowley, too. Crowley has to do something.
No, Crowley's not involved in this at all.
This would involve every show, then, because we have Bob involved. We have Mulsey involved. We can have the morning show
involved. Crowley and Dorn. Sure, we could. So I'm looking forward to that. The other piece of good news, I got a text from Rick Bell, the assistant women's basketball coach at Duquesne.
Oh, before we get on that, Tony just responded, all caps, yes.
A wiffle
a Baldwin,
ball game?
Baldwin wiffle game in the outfield at Wild Things Park.
I have an idea.
My eyes have lit up entirely when you said that, too. Incredible idea.
A team of fan players takes on your piddly little Baldwin wiffle ball
piddly
team.
Little wiffle
How about that? Me, Mulsey, Pony, Crowley, Doran. We take on your team in an all-star game. You ready for that?
Oh, I'm more than prepared. I know the talent that I have. I think it would be a dominant performance.
The possibilities are endless. Rick Bell, assistant women's basketball coach at Duquesne, reminds me that tonight, or informs me on the first one, that Megan McConnell plays her first exhibition game tonight for the Phoenix Mercury at the Las Vegas Aces. I mean, that is pretty damn cool that she is with the Mercury right now, giving it a shot, and she's playing tonight. And then her brother TJ plays tonight for the Pacers again at Cleveland in game two.
And they stole game one in Cleveland, Indiana.
Well, I mean, what a story. What a story. The McConnells from Char Valley.
TJ had, what, 17 in a game during the last series? He just continues to play. He's like built for playoff basketball. Chippy, gritty type of player, comes off the bench, provides a great spark.
Yeah, he's just really good.
And really excited for Megan, too, to be able to make her debut.
Yes. So I hope that's enough good news for the morning. Was there anything else I needed to say? No, that was it. The Pirate fans in your opening were just incredible. Can we hear those two guys again? I think they were both from our show. There was one later. Tony from Washington. Is it another Tony from Washington?
No, it's Paul in Washington. Oh, Paul. He always brings the thunder. But first it was caller Chuck that really gave us a couple good
yeah,
one-liners.
He got the club going, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To call this team bad is a compliment.
And if you thought that was...
I love that guy.
You thought that was one, he brought this, too.
They're a joke.
So if you're going to hear that drop pretty frequently for things that we use. Caller Dave, though,
yeah,
also stole the thunder.
Bring it,
what?
Dave.
Planet is he coming from?
On Ben Charrington.
Oh, I was going to ask, is that Nutting, Charrington, or Shelton? I mean, this is incredible, dude. They're on pace for 54 wins. What are we talking about? Go look up the 1962 Mets.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period.
That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
How many games did they win? How many did they even play? 154 or 162?
Last year's White Sox was also an all-time low.
Yeah. Did the Rockies win last night? Last I checked, the Rockies were going to be the worst team in baseball history, and the Pirates were only 5.5 games ahead of them. They're only 5.5 games behind the Pirates. Look up the 62 Mets, who are the, you know, the crown jewel of hideous sports baseball franchises, maybe of all time. They're the one that people reference more times than not. It shouldn't be taking this long, Limits.
Well, I was first looking for the Colorado Rockies, who did not play yesterday.
I don't want the Rockies.
They are 6-28.
And what are the Pirates?
6-28.
The Pirates are 5.5 games ahead of them.
The Pirates have 12 wins, yes.
And the losses make it a 5.5 game spread.
Last year's White Sox were 41-121. The 1962 Mets, their inaugural season, welcome to the big leagues, went 41-20-1.
Well, that's going to be a tough one, especially the tie. I don't know how you get a tie out of this. 41-20-1. I'm not putting it out of reach, are you? If things keep going like this, I guarantee the Mets had a better cleanup hitter than Valdez, although he batted fifth last night. Here we go. Let's start with this. I've been getting a lot of questions, including multiple on the mailbag. And I know you have too from the texters. Because today would be the Derek Shelton show, right?
Yes.
What happened to the Shelty show? I have addressed this, but I get asked an inordinate amount of times by people. Like when I'm out, you know, around town, whatever.
Me too.
People are asking about that. Here's the situation, and I'll tell you the honest-to-God truth, every bit of it. You know me as a person who doesn't think ahead a lot. Tell people what time I call you about today's show, any day.
Sometimes at 9, but typically 9:30, sometimes 9:45.
So it was the week of the Pirates opener in Miami, okay? And I was actually headed to Florida, not for that, thank God, but for vacation. So I think I asked our boss, Craig Riley, on a Wednesday because I was leaving on Thursday or maybe Wednesday night. It finally occurred to me, what's going on with the Shelty show? Because in previous years, I believe we had at least one in spring training, but certainly it started in the regular season. Hadn't thought of it for 1 second until I was about to leave for Florida. He said, I'm not sure what's going on with it. And I did not think about it again until either you or somebody, maybe a fan, tweeted me or texted me and said that Andrew Filippone addressed that either on Thursday or Friday of that week, saying there will be no Shelty show. So Pony got the scoop, I guess.
He did.
Got the story and broke it.
That's where I heard it first.
So I come in the next Monday, maybe it was Tuesday, and I asked the boss, you know, what happened? Are we doing the show or not? I heard Pony said something on the air. He said, we are not doing it. And I said, why? And he basically said, they don't want to do it. And that was that. And I haven't thought about it much since, to be honest with you. I'm assuming that means Shelty didn't want to do the show. That seems like a logical conclusion, unless somebody from the Pirates, either above him, and there's only a couple of people above him, or PR-wise, were like, yeah, that doesn't serve us. Let's not do the show. So that's the story. That's every bit of the story that I know.
And that's everything that I know, too, entirely. It's unfortunate. I wish we would have the opportunity at noon today to be able to talk to him. But
I mean, let's be honest. By the end of last year, starting with the 10-game losing streak, the thing had unraveled to where I felt like I was obligated every week to ask him about his job security. I don't know if you may have a clip. Remember the clip from last year where he was saying, you ask me that every week? I mean, what would I be asking him now? There's almost no other story except for all his horrible decisions. I'd be asking him about the talent level on the team. I'd be asking him about, you know, Canario. I'd be asking him about Izzy, Z, Peggy, and Tree, right? Went for a while, went to the plate
Izzy,
one day.
Z, Peggy, Tree.
Looking for a hit.
Century 3, Chevrolet.
They never got one. They never got one, and the season turned. Well, you know, that's where it would be going right now. I don't know, but it would be interesting, wouldn't it? It'd be interesting.
Oh, it'd be very interesting. I'd be very curious to hear what his tone would be, especially this year with how things have transpired and the heat has definitely turned up in the kitchen.
Is it, though? I mean, that's the other question I got from people today in the mailbag was, what is Bob Nutting thinking? We all watch this team. How is the manager still here and how is the GM still here? I think he might have a number in mind, limits. I think it's probably something like 50 games, maybe 60 games. And it gets tiresome. You know, I was thinking in my house today, I don't want to be leading some sort of witch hunt. I don't consider it a witch hunt. I'm in my house. I'm thinking about my family. These people have families. You know, it's like the constant criticism of other coaches in town, one of whom has since been fired in Mike Sullivan. But it's pro sports. You know, Derek Shelton seems like a really good guy. He really does. And also a really good baseball man. He's just not, I don't think, manager material. And here he never had a prayer anyway. You could have some combination of Joe Torre, Casey Stengel, and Connie Mack, and they ain't winning here. Could they win more? Yeah, I think Terry Francona could too. But he never had a chance. I don't know how many times in history the same guy who was there at the beginning of a total rebuild was there for the winning. Maybe John McKay with the Tampa Bay Bucks? I don't know. And he was in favor of his team's execution, if you remember that quote, Limits. So it doesn't feel good to come in here every day and talk about this stuff and talk about how they should move on, but it's a fact. At least I think it's a fact. It's moved from the realm of opinion to, I think, something that every single person out there except those three would agree on.
It's kind of similar
time.
To what Kyle Dubas said with Sullivan, like, hey, he came here, they won significantly, now it's on the decline. Can you really build it back up to that? There are a lot of instances.
Well, except they never won here, so it's not like what he said.
But what I'm saying is, he has gone through this entire rebuild. You don't see a lot of managers at all.
No.
Go into a rebuild and be able to take you out of it. It's a bridge manager.
They don't come out the other side. John Russell didn't. And man, I'll tell you this, every day that goes by, I marvel more and more about what Neil Huntington and Clint Hurdle did here. I truly do. Those guys should have a combination statue outside that building. It's sort of the Walt Harris effect. As I look back on Walt more and more, I'm like, that dude, he did the best job of any of these guys. He walked into literally a pile of rubble. That was Johnny Majors 2.0 and the literal rubble that was Pitt Stadium. And he did the same thing his successors have done, whether it's Wani, Paul Christ, and even Narduzzi. Now, Narduzzi did have the one season where he actually won an outright championship. He did, which none of the other guys ever did. And he walked into a challenging situation. but they've become perennially mediocre. They really have.
Yep.
And it's no different than Walt. And Walt had by far the biggest challenge of all of them. And he somehow got to a partial win and got to the Fiesta Bowl. You know, he shared the Big East title and through tiebreakers won it and got to the Fiesta Bowl. So I look back at the miracle that was him. I don't know that I appreciated it at the time. And even that is nothing compared to what Huntington and Hurdle did.
Sometimes you just don't know what you can appreciate until it's truly gone.
It makes the miracle on ice makes the miracle on ice look like a scrimmage, Mulsey. I mean, limits. It really does. I mean, before them and at before them, there was a 20-year losing streak. And after them, and they faded out at the end. I mean, Huntington became a victim of his own lack of drafting and development prowess, the people around him that he hired.
Yeah, Kevin Newman, Cole Tucker, Will Craig 3 years in a row in the draft.
But you look at the time before them and the time since they've been gone, and oh my God, how did they do it would be my question. Partially how they did it was the guy before him, before Huntington, who was Dave Littlefield, actually drafted some players that helped them win. Namely, Andrew McCutchen,
Walker,
who wasn't an easy pick at the top of the draft.
Pedro.
No, that was
Pedro Huntington.
He drafted Pedro. Yep. And then he brought in guys like Liriano and Burnett and Russell Martin. He made some brilliant moves. He did. He brought in winners and they won. What is happening here? This is just getting worse. We did the comparison yesterday. They were one game ahead of the 2020 team, which was the beginning of the rebuild. You talk about rubble. That's what it was at the time, intentionally so. They smashed all the buildings to the ground and started to build up, or so they thought. That was the plan. And this team might be worse than that one. We can accurately say, and as this was Pony 2 yesterday, we can accurately say that this team is trending. I mean, listen to this. This team is trending to become the worst Pirate team there has ever been, at least in the 162-game era, and maybe even all time. That's where we're headed. 412-928-9370. And here's the other thing on my mind. These were good questions today. And it's a mailbag-centric opening. Tuesdays have become that because it involves people's curiosity, their anger, their pain, wanting answers to things. And today the big question, a popular question, was what does the rest of Major League Baseball think of Bob Nutting and the Pirates? Whether it's the players union, whether it's other team executives and owners, just what is the opinion of the league on this team and this franchise? Let's talk about that next. Again, at 412-928-9370. Did you print out the reads and did I misplace them? Limits.
I believe so.
No, I didn't. You never gave them to me. Where are they? Anyway, off the top, brought to you by JP Roofing and Siding. We have treats galore. Did the Noah Constrictor get back to you? What, is he sleeping in St. Louis?
It's possible, yeah.
Is he up in the arch? You ever been up in the arch, Limits?
No, I have not. I've never been to St. Louis.
You should. You're the beat writer.
I'd like to go.
It was horrifying, is what it was. It's an arch, and it's about the size of a tiny closet, and you sit in something that's akin to what you sit in when you're riding a roller coaster, a little bucket seat.
That's small.
And there's barely room for anything but the bucket seat. So you start at one side of the arch. You go all the way up to the top. They let you out in a little tiny viewing area. And you can feel the thing swaying back and forth. I'm getting sick talking to you about it.
So you're going up the arch sideways, basically, right? Obviously because of the shape of the arch.
I don't know what you mean by that. No, you're going up forward like you're in a roller coaster. What do you mean sideways?
So,
forget it. You go up to...
It's an arch.
Yeah, it is. It's an arch,
so
yes.
So you're obviously sloped, but when you go up the one side of the arch... Is it like going up like the Phantom's Revenge or the Thunderbolt?
Yeah, you're going up forward, okay, like on a roller coaster. And then you look to your left or your right, depending on which side you leave from. and you see the whole skyline of St. Louis.
I don't know why I was acting like you were close to being upside down on the arch. You know, I don't know.
It isn't, in fact, a computer ride. I mean, an amusement park ride. It doesn't go upside down or anything. People aren't yelling. No, but it does go up straight. They let you out, and then there's a sensation, or maybe it's real, that the arch is swaying.
That's scary.
I told the security guy, I have to go back down. I know it's not my turn right away. I need to be on the next train out of here. I'm out. And they let me on. May have even been a small child in a family that I cut in front of, but I had to get out of there.
You were that afraid of the arch?
Yeah, it reminds me of the time I started yelling at a guy at Kennywood because we were on a Ferris wheel. And I hate Ferris wheels more than anything, especially when they stop at the top. You know what I mean?
Very scary.
And then on the way back down, I said, "What are you stopping for? Let me off this thing." I was yelling at the guy.
And I imagine he took it well.
Well, they did stop it. They let me off. Special. I learned from my mom that when things aren't going right, whether you're on a plane, train, automobile, whatever, or amusement park ride, you have a right to say, "I want to get off." Well, you can't midair or anything, but you have a right to say, "I want this to end. I don't want to be on this anymore." You have that right, Limits. Have you ever exercised that?
No, I probably should have. I'm not very good on heights.
She stopped a bus ride once from Cape May to Philadelphia and just got off the bus. She thought the driver of the bus was drunk.
So just got off the bus.
Yeah.
And what was the alternative to getting there?
I don't know how she got there. It might have been a cab. I think she may have called a cab. She no longer wanted to be on the bus. I've done that. I did it on a plane in Chicago on the way to Kansas City.
Midair. We are flying over Indiana right now. Please drop me
off. No, we were on this. It was windy, very windy. And there were problems with planes leaving from Chicago to get to Kansas City for what would become the Antonio Brown FaceTime live game. And we were just waiting and waiting. And then we switched planes. And now we're on one of those little pencil planes. And the lights go out on the thing. Oh, a little electrical problem. Plus all the wind. I'm like, I'm out. I'm getting off the plane. She's like, "Where are you going?" I said, not to Kansas City on this thing. I'm not flying on a pencil. So I went back in, got a nice big plane later in the day, flew out to Kansas City and met Mark Cabali, Joe Rutter, Jeremy Fowler, and others for a nice barbecue.
Sounds wonderful.
It was. Coming up, your calls, 412-928-9370 on anything we've talked about, especially the Pirates at this stage at this moment in time. This isn't a week or 2 weeks. They're 36 games into the season. And they're trending to become one of the worst, if not the worst, Pirate teams of all time. Do you see an end to that? Does somebody see like a solution here? I don't. And we have people wondering, what does the rest of baseball think of this monstrosity?
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic salad kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their 6-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The 4-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
It just keeps going and going and going, and nobody's doing anything. I guess I'm kind of talking about Pittsburgh sports at large, at least before a week ago when the Penguins finally moved on Mike Sullivan. But I'm talking specifically about the Pirates. It just won't end. It feels like it's getting worse. And it doesn't feel like there's a solution. The numbers are mind-blowing. They're on pace for 54 wins. Are they going to get more than that? Probably. But is there any guarantee? Are we looking at a 100-loss season? They have to improve to get on that kind of pace. And I got a lot of questions today in the old Post-Gazette mailbag. Multiple questions about, well, I'll read them. Matthew McClay gives me one. Do other Major League Baseball execs and owners have a take on the Pirates? Do they feel that the Pirates' poor ownership / management is damaging the integrity and value of the game? And then Corey and Butler. When does what the Pirates are doing become an embarrassment to not just this city and fans, but to the entire Major League Baseball, he says. Perhaps not worded in a very eloquent way, but I get the gist of the questions. In fact, they're very direct. And here's what I would say to that, because we've gotten it on the show before through text and through talking to people. Is can Major League Baseball do anything? You know, what do people out there think of this? Here's what I would say. I don't communicate with, you know, union reps or Major League Baseball executives, but I think it's pretty clear that they're probably split on what they think of the Pirates. I think the union is perpetually, like the fan base, ticked off at the Pirates because they're not doing enough or really anything to try to win. Their payroll is laughingly low, and that makes the whole league look bad. That's a bad look. Them and some other teams, another handful of teams, give it a bad look at the bottom. And players obviously want teams to spend because they want players to make more money. So they're perpetually suspicious of the Pirates and angry at them. You may remember, I think it was back in 18 or so, the players' union piped up on that issue, taking the Pirates to task and wondering if they were allocating their resources properly, revenue sharing and things like that. Are you putting it into the major league team? And if you are, why is the payroll always so low? So I think from that side of it, you have more anger than from the owner's side. Here's why. Because in pro sports, everybody's survival is based on winning. You survive and thrive if you win. That means you make more money. That means you keep your job if you're a GM, a manager, etc. So, of course you want losers in your midst. I mean, how great was it for the Steelers all those years before the Bengals got good from time to time? All those years of having the Bengals and the Browns in the same division. You pray for perennial patsies like that. And that's what the Pirates are. You want somebody, wherever else you are in Major League Baseball, to beat around like a pinata. So other owners can feign some sort of concern or can deliver some sort of, you know, half-baked criticism, although I haven't seen much of that with the Pirates. But in reality, I have to believe they're really happy that there's somebody that they can beat all the time. We all want that, right? From youth leagues on up, playing little league baseball, yeah, you love competition. You also love to go into a game knowing you're going to win most of the time. High school, of course. College and pros. That's the way I think other teams look at the Pirates. There was a very interesting story, sort of, about this by Bill Madden of the New York Daily News. Limits is efforting him. Not getting him, but he is efforting him. Aren't you, Limits?
I'm doing my best.
I know you are. You always do. And that's what I admire about you. He wrote about how Rob Manfred, the commissioner, is not thrilled with sort of the, you know, grotesque disparities in the sport. What really has his attention is several now fan bases expressing their rage and outrage. That gets your attention if you're running a sport. It's not just one, it's several. Here's what Madden wrote, and I quote, "While payroll disparity is real and getting worse, Manfred can't help but concede it is exacerbated by his equally real owner problem." Madden writes, "It had to be a baseball first on opening day when at least three owners, Reinsdorf in Chicago, Nutting in Pittsburgh, Sternberg in Tampa, were booed lustily by hometown fans and greeted with sell the team chants and banners. Look around, Mr. Commissioner," Madden writes. "Nearly 17% of your fan bases, and we'll throw in Bruce Sherman's Marlins and Dick Monfort's Rockies, are fed up with the ownership of their teams and clamoring for baseball to liberate them." Madden writes specifically of the Pirates. They're headed for their sixth straight losing season under Charrington and Shelton, but Nutting doesn't seem to care. He would do himself a favor by bringing in a baseball savvy guy like Buck Showalter, and if nothing else, just pick his brain on what they're doing wrong in Pittsburgh. So I think that longtime connected reporters and writers like Bill Madden and Jeff Passan, who I think is great, reflect the industry-wide opinion of the Pirates. I think they're conveying that in their writings and interviews and things like that. And Passan has been very clear about what he thinks of what's going on here. And you remember on the McAfee show last season, he said, and I quote, "When you have a team like the Pirates," Passan said, "I look at them and I'm like, try just once. Please go out and try to field a winning team." And this was under a headline, "Jeff Passan is on a mission to show MLB fans why the Pirates are a problem." So I think that probably accurately reflects a lot of the opinion out there, at least in terms of this. People view the Pirates, I think other team executives and owners, as a charity case, basically, run by an incompetent owner who hires incompetent people and cares most about the bottom line. I think that's how baseball views the Pirates. But there's this old saying, Limits, and this is a big but. There's an old saying, everybody loves a winner. You know what everybody loves more? If you're in the game, a loser. A perennial loser. That's what they love more. The more teams you can beat every season, the better it is for you. So everybody loves a winner. Yeah, that's true, but not as true in the business itself as everybody loves a loser. The way the Steelers and their fans loved having the Browns and Bengals in that division when they were both horrible. That's a big bonus and advantage to just have two sad sacks like that in your own division. That's three guaranteed wins and maybe four every year. Used to be anyway. And that's a beautiful thing. 412-928-9370. So this idea, and this is where people go with this idea, is, well, what does the rest of baseball think? What does Manfred think? Can they do anything? Will they do anything? Nah. Because everybody loves a loser. Now, might there be ways to force teams to spend a little more? Maybe. Maybe they'll come up with that. But as Passan says, and he says this is a non-negotiable, is that that the cap and the floor are together. They're both in or they're both out. And I think we can guess which one it is. I don't think you're seeing a cap, and therefore you're not seeing a floor. That's a package deal. So while there may be some angst on Manfred's part, and maybe behind the scenes he would urge certain teams to get in the game a little bit more and be more competitive, there's not going to be anything in the next CBA that's going to compel anybody to do anything. Now, the hope would be, and I would have a lot more respect for Bob Nutting, if he would be at the front of the lines saying this is absolutely unfair. This is a grotesque disparity of resources and payrolls, and it gives teams like us no chance. Do I buy that? No, because I've seen teams on low payrolls win. But would he have a point? Yes. Would I respect it if, when this CBA is up about a year from now, he's on the front lines protesting with a sign, parading up and down Fifth Avenue or wherever Major League Baseball offices are, saying, we need change. This ain't fair. And I'm going to lead the coalition of bottom feeding owners saying this is a ridiculous economic system in which we can't win. I would respect that. But who thinks that's going to happen? Anybody? Does anybody think that's going to happen? He wasn't the front lines the last time the CBA was up. He signed off on that thing quicker than Limits would sign off on a job promotion to take my job. Right, Limits?
Not to take your job, Joe. I'd like to be the third with you and Bob. I think that'd be great.
Man, he couldn't sign off on that quick enough. And that brings me back to Madden's story in the New York Daily News. And I quote, some owners are perfectly content to finish out of the playoffs with the lowest payrolls in baseball, but still make a nice profit every year thanks to 60-some million in revenue sharing and another 60 million from the central fund. Are those numbers accurate? I don't know. That's what he's writing. I don't know that anybody is calling him and disputing those numbers. Maybe they are. But I think no matter what you read and hear, I have a very hard time believing the Pirates are losing money. I think that would take a lot of financial gymnastics to get to that point. You know, you would have accountants, flying off balance beams. And what's that thing they walk across that makes me nervous?
The trapeze?
No.
No.
The balance beam, I guess. Is that the one they do all the
trapeze, I thought.
No, there's
it is.
A name for it, Limits. There's a name for the thing that gymnasts walk across.
That's the balance beam, yeah.
Yeah, the balance beam.
Yeah.
Is it the hobby horse? Is that the other thing? The thing they run up and
what's
go
it called?
Flying over? What
there
is that thing
there
called?
Is it's something a horse. Called a horse, yes.
It's a horse of some kind. Can you imagine if Joe Kopp just stood there and they used him as the horse?
I mean, he could. He's very tall. They could use horse for that, potentially. The word begins with a P, and I can't think of what it is.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time believing that there's money loss going on here. Sorry. But either way, you know, until I see somebody from that organization protest, then I have to believe that things are going pretty well from a financial standpoint. So where are we left with all of this? Well, in the same place. That if there's going to be more spending and more investment in the team, it's got to come from one guy. And in the meantime, we're looking at Alexander Canario and Tommy Pham. And if I hear one more person talk about the professional at-bats that Adam Frazier gives us, I'm just going to, I don't know what I'll do. Or Key Brian Hayes, how there's hidden stats around that make him actually look like a good hitter. He gets an extra base hit about as often as, about as often as Crowley roots for Pitt. What does he have, five and 150 at-bats?
It's the pommel horse.
Yeah, the pommel horse.
Yeah, I knew it was something like that.
All right.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. That it's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads. We got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.